You're listening to Interviews with Adam. I'm your host, Adam Miller. And following an amazing conference last month, we had such a great time together studying the subject of worship. And I'm joined today by one of my good friends who I've met now and worked with a few times in various different conferences. And he was at our recent Definitions Conference. We're talking with Chap Bettis. He's the founder of the Apollos Project and the author of The Disciple Making Parent. He did a great workshop at our conference on leading worship in the home and leading families in worship. It's a great privilege to have him with us, joining us for the many voices for that one message. Chap, thanks for being a part of the program.
Well, Adam, it's a joy.
Why don't you get us started by telling us a little bit about the ministry of the Apollos Project, how it got started, and really what its mission and vision is.
Well, thanks. I planted and pastored a church in New England for 25 years, and along the way was burdened to pass the gospel to my own children. And I'd grown up in a Christian home and had a bumpy transition from a child's faith to an adult faith, and wanted to make sure that my own children had heard the gospel. And then also the young people in the church, God supernaturally brought us some like-minded families. And so it started this ministry on the side, just helping parents talk to their kids and think about discipling their kids, and really had no plans to change ministries, was enjoying leading my church. And then God just changed my heart about 4 years ago to pursue this ministry full time. And so now I really give my full time. The Apollos Project is a 501c3 nonprofit with a great board of directors, and give myself to this full time to help parents pass the gospel to their kids and grandkids as well.
Tell us a little bit about where the need and necessity, especially here in New England, is so important. Thinking about families and worship, we live in an area where there are very low populations of Christians, and you'd think that the emphasis would be on outreach ministries to do evangelism, street preaching, and stuff like that. Why is the family as the core so important to our gospel witness here in the New England states?
Yeah, well, that's a great question, and we live, our area is 2-3% evangelical Christian, and so we're perceived as the strange ones. Although, you know, I speak around the country, and there are other parts, there are many more Christians. So, but you know, the Christianity is in fact somewhat strange. It's always been countercultural, and one of the primary ways we need to make disciples is of our family. If our kids are going to stand strong, if when they go to school, our grandkids go to school, they're going to be the minority. And yet Jesus says in the Sermon on the Mount, where he says, "Broad is the road that leads to destruction, narrow is the way that leads to eternal life." So truth is not determined by the majority. So we can be confident in that, and we can pass that confidence on to our kids and our grandkids that just because we're not in the minority, or just because we are in the minority, doesn't mean we're wrong. But really, the bigger vision in all this is the Great Commission. And I know this is the Missions Month, and I appreciate you having me on to talk about that, because the Great Commission really is undergirds and the mission of the church, which is to go and make disciples, baptizing them and teaching them to obey everything He's commanded us. And we do that. We send missionaries across the ocean, and we reach out as a church, and we should. And there's, boy, you know, there's the harvest is plentiful in New England. But at the same time, our home is also a mission field as well. So we can live out the Great Commission in our home as we seek to pass the gospel to our kids and grandkids. And one of the reasons I'm burdened for this is because we need to do both. Reaching out as a church, but also families, Great Commission in their homes. It's vital, because if we don't, so first of all, you have just the souls of my children or grandchildren that I'm worried about. But for the sake of the gospel, our land will become unchristian if we're not passing it to our kids. And that's exactly what we see, for example, in Scotland. Our church is supporting some some missions in Scotland, which is now similar to New England. And yet at one time, Scotland was bursting with the gospel. So it's what's happened is we're having to re-evangelize. And so anyway, it's vital that we can carry out the Great Commission. Yes, we can send missionaries. We can go on short-term trips. We can should plan, our church should plan outreach events, et cetera. But at the same time, we also need to have in our head, hey, God has given me, he didn't just give me some babies. He's given me eternal souls to disciple. And that's a privilege and a joy in my own home.
You spoke at our recent Songtime Definitions conference, and you did a workshop on leading worship in the home and leading children and grandchildren to go to church to worship together. How does worship play into this aspect of fulfilling the Great Commission in the home?
Well, you know, missions, as John Piper says, missions exist because worship doesn't, and worship is our highest and holiest calling. It's combining both our hearts and our minds and truth and emotions and affections and all that. So I think really what we're doing is leading our children to get a sense of God and to worship God. And so that has been expressed publicly, that God commands it. You know, it's interesting. Christianity is unique in the Judeo-Christian background is unique in that there's a congregation. I was just at a church 2 weeks ago, and they have a number of exchange students and a number from the middle from East Asia, and they were remarking about how unusual it was to see this religious congregation as opposed to, you know, individual sacrifices to idols, which is what they'd come from. So there's something mysterious happening when we're gathering, and there's models that our children can see, and you know, they're being taught from the word. So absolutely, as children, and I mean as parents and grandparents, we need to be committed to public worship, and that will also, I think, that commitment can guard them as they get older and perhaps walk through some doubts, and because it's very easy in the 20s to you know, not be to be committed to a local body with all her faults. So that's one thing, just being committed to public worship, being committed to a church with all its faults, because Christ loves the church. And then secondly, in our own homes, having some semblance of worship. And then, you know, people debate about, you know, so I guess some of the, you know, the older Puritans would have singing and long prayer time and et cetera. My conviction is on that is what is good for our kids where they're at. But there should be a time when our kids are seeing their parents or their grandparents, you know, open up the word, pray out loud, which may be difficult for some people, but is you know, we should be able to do in front of a 3-year-old or a 4-year-old. And, you know, just saying worship is not just a Sunday morning thing. It's part of our lives the rest of the day, the rest of the week as well. And I mean, you could argue rightly that all of life is worship, but specifically as a family, opening up the word together and saying we're a God fearing family, and the word is central to us. And so
this is an area I think that a lot of parents and grandparents in particular are concerned about, because we are seeing so many young kids going out of high school into college in that kind of critical time in their life, walking away from the church and not coming back. What do you suggest for somebody that's in that situation? How can they start to lead worship in the home or encourage their kids or their grandchildren to go to church when they're almost, they're essentially adults?
Well, I think that, I outline a number, a lot of this in my book, The Disciple-Making Parent. I think the bigger picture is that I'm realizing that I'm a disciple-making parent, that's, God has given me little children to disciple, to influence. I can't change their heart, only God can, but I can definitely influence the habits. And I can explain things, I think, that are important. And so So one is just to see a habit in us of commitment to the local church. It's easy now with sports and everything on Sunday morning. It's easy for that. It's easy to become users of the local church rather than givers. And so the one is to see for us to have this conviction that the church is the bride of Christ and she's worthy of our effort, of our commitment. And I think similarly to realize that one of the things you see in Jesus's discipleship is he knew some things that were coming, some challenges that were coming to his disciples. And he spoke to them. He predicted those. And he said, you know, here's the answer. And so in a similar way, to be able to speak to perhaps some of those temptations that will come later on is to start talking about them earlier. So early in the teen years or, you know, to say, well, some kids, when they get in their 20s, you know, don't see the need to be committed to the, you know, to the church. But in fact, Jesus says, talks about that if we love him, we're going to also love the brothers and the sisters. So just this similarity that if God has really changed our heart and given us a new nature, then there's going to be this commitment to the local church. And let me just throw in one more thing, and if you want to, we can keep talking on this or talk about something else. But one of the things I think we as parents can do is give an apologetic or explain why sometimes the church has quirky people. I think kids sometimes tune in to that. You know, they tune in to, man, there's really a lot of quirky people in our church. And to be able to say one of the great things about the church is it is a sociological miracle that that the church receives all sorts of people. And rather than causing us to kind of pull back, that should actually make it attractive to say, when Jesus looked out on the crowds, he had compassion. And so to say, yeah, you know, we have some quirky people in our church. And yet that's the beauty of Christianity.
I want to talk a little bit about your ministry of the Apollos Project and what it's doing specifically. I want to find out a little bit about how that aspect of your ministry is able to help families and help local churches. You travel and you speak not only here in New England, but throughout the U.S. Tell us a little bit about what you're seeing and what you're speaking about that connects to the needs of the local church.
Yeah, thanks. That's a great question. I've focused particularly on three different conferences, if you want to use that term, weekend conferences. One is my book, The Disciple Making Parent, just giving people an overview of that. And then another conference I do, people ask for the prequel to that, which I call Parenting with Confidence, which is just Parenting 101, which there seems to be a hunger for that among young parents. And then also for teens, really for everyone, but teens and parents of teens, I have a seminar I call 7 Questions Everyone Should Answer, which is really just basic questions of the Christian faith. How do we know Jesus existed? How do we know that we can trust the Gospels? How do we know the resurrection happened? Why are there hypocrites? Why is there evil and suffering? Questions like that. And so I do those on weekend conferences. I also, because of New England and because life is often busy, have started doing what I'm calling a mini conference. So doing that in the middle of the week. I'm doing one of those actually this week. Just on a weeknight for gathering for parents. So just kind of a one-shot deal. Those are the things, those are particularly the things I do. And also one of the things I'm excited about recently is I released a study guide for the disciple-making parent. So it's a pretty thick resource. I know that. And so to help the people who are not readers, I give an audiobook free. Away free if people just email me that they bought the book. And then secondly, this is a study guide so that like a Sunday school, an 8-week study could happen. So trying to equip the churches because I know that real change happens life on life. And I know that it's the people in the trenches that really need the support, need the encouragement of being a pastor for 25 years. You know, I know I would have a conference speaker come in and it would create a might create a splash, but the real life on life change are the pastors, the small group leaders in the trenches. It's having the conversations in the back of the church over the phone during the week. That really, you know, that's what changes lives. And then wanting to equip them to know how specifically do we disciple our kids. I think that's the biggest question is, okay, I want to do this. I'm open to it. I'm persuaded. But what specifically, what steps should I take? And that's in the disciple-making parent.
This is such a crucial area. And I think that it seems very very straightforward that the parents do the work. But if you look across the board in a lot of church ministries, parents are asking for kind of resources like this because they're very busy. They're very distracted. The kids are all going to different activities, sporting events, and it's hard to have those moments where you can actually do what the family is needing to do in leading worship in the home and creating disciples. This is a really important resource. Have you found that the churches are really grabbing onto what you're talking about and seeing that as a new emphasis that they want to make as a priority in their ministries?
Well, I'm excited because I do see churches where some parents are grabbing onto that and getting it. Because one of the things I say is the first step, the first thing that needs to change or needs to be examined is nothing to do with activities. It has to do with my heart as a parent. Because as a parent, I want to give my child the best. I mean, every parent wants to give his child the best, his or her child the best. But the question is, what is the best? And so the first battle's in my heart. Do I say, like John said in 3 John 4, I have no greater joy than to hear that my children are walking in the truth. So yeah, I've been encouraged to find parents out there who resonate with that message, who want to, who want to be equipped to pass the gospel to their kids, disciple their kids. And one of the things, we really need to create this culture in our churches, because what happens is that fear kicks in as a parent. And I remember this. So, you've got a little 3 or 4 year old and you find out, oh, you know, Susie's peers are taking dance, and you just have this little catch in your chest and you think, oh, is she falling behind? Or Johnny's doing T-ball or whatever, baseball. And so to have a cohort, to have a group of parents who are saying, no, we're going to be more intentional. And yes, you know, we may do some of these things, dance or baseball or whatever, but we're not going to be driven by that fear that they're being left behind, that we're keeping the Great Commission the North Star of our parenting.
As you think about some of the challenges that parents are facing today, thinking about all of the technology and all the difficulties, this is something I think that comes up a lot of times in the thoughts and questions of parents and grandparents alike, is there seems to be so many distractions right in the kids' hands. How do you break those barriers, or how do you use those technologies to be able to continue to have that disciple-making parent attitude with the kids of this generation, the digital age?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think related to the technology, it starts early as a parent realize I am an authority. And that I need to, I'm going to love my child, but I'm going to love them in the truth. And so one of the encouraging things to remind parents is actually your kids don't own a phone. You own a phone that you are allowing them to use. So, you are allowing them to use technology, your technology. So therefore, as you open that funnel up, you need to think through, try and be intentional about what freedoms you give them, and should you draw up some sort of little contract. So one is actually opening up the funnel gradually and intentionally, and then as you do that, talking through with this privilege, what responsibilities come, with this privilege that I'm about to give you. And then related to that, I think thinking about two specific things. One is the amount of time that technology takes up, and then the other is the content. So, and related to the amount, just being, again, we're the parent, setting boundaries early, realize that it can be addictive. So I was just with an older couple when I spoke last week, and they just talked about it. It broke my heart. They talked about their grandchild, so grandparents, and then the children, adult children, are believers. But then they got the grandchildren come and visit, and instead of interacting with the grandparents, they're often on their device. Well, I see that as a failure of the parents to say, look, we're here to honor, to spend time, get to know your grandparents, and you know, let's put the device away. So that's just the amount. And then you can talk about the whole actual content. And then having said all that, I would say, assuming the world, the worst because of the world we live in, and connecting to their heart. Ultimately, I just have a resource now. I call it the Donut Date Journal. And it's just the idea of taking our kids out on donut dates to connect with their hearts. But that time set aside to really talk about what's going on and what our kids will, you know, unfortunately, they will see it. And we just have to be connected to the heart to be able to ask questions we may not want to ask, we may not want to know the answers. But that's, unfortunately, that's the world we live in. So that was probably a longer answer than you wanted, but I think technology is just, yes, it's a huge, huge issue.
This is one of those days where there's such a gap between the people that are raising their kids or their grandkids and the technology that it's almost a different language, and it can be a huge barrier. There can be a lot of confusion as to even how much it affects the kids, but there's nothing that replaces the interconnectivity of what you're talking about in this disciple-making aspect, where it's one-on-one, a donut date where you put away the technology and you just have that personal relationship, that interpersonal relationship. There's no technology that's going to be able to replace that, is there?
Well, that's what's amazing is they talk about, in some ways, we're the most we're connected and the disconnected generation, because even as there's this artificial world of being connected to others, we're actually not learning life skills of relating. And so that's, you know, there's a blessing when as parents, you know, we put things away. So even we miss this a little bit, but even now, you know, families will, you know, there's no reason all the kids have to be on their device in the car unless you want them to be as a parent. So you can say, okay, we're going for a ride and this is quality family time. Put your device away. We're just going to talk and interact. And so the same thing as I'm talking about with the grandparents there, saying, you know, you can be on your device 1 hour a day, but the rest of the time you're gonna spend with your grandparent. And so just because that's where the value is. It's really a strange time to live. And I think I've said to my kids, you know, we look back on people who made some mistakes, like in the 60s or 70s, and who would go to the beach and lather up with oil, and now they're dealing with skin cancer. I would say, what in the world are you thinking? Well, I think we're going to look at this generation some years from now and see how the technology has changed our interaction, changed our brain, and go, what in the world were we thinking? But I agree 100% that technology, we have to manage that as parents.
What is a piece of advice you would have for a parent or a grandparent listening today? They say, I hear what you're saying. I just don't know where to start. Where do I even begin with my child or with my grandchild? Say they feel like they've made so many mistakes. And if they start something now, it's like starting something out of the blue. And it would just feel unnatural, and it would seem almost hypocritical if they were to start something now after you know, not doing it for so many years.
Well, I think, first of all, it's never too late to start doing the right thing. It's never too late. And so there's always, you know, there's always repentance and saying, oh, I haven't realized I've been doing some things I want to do differently. And just, that's the Christian life. But then I would say ultimately, I think about passing the gospel really works on our heart from the inside out. So So starting gradually. So one is my example. Do they see me loving the Lord? Do they see me going to church, et cetera? And so starting my example, Deuteronomy 6, where the later passage talks about talking to our kids about the word. The first part of that passage talks about these commands are to be on your heart. So, starting small. So I think, depends on where you're at and depends on, grandparent or parent, but, introducing, if the kids are small, reading a Bible book or taking, a short chapter of the Bible and just saying, you know what, I've been convicted. I want us to read the Bible. And so you're the parent, you're the authority, you're providing the roof over their head. The other thing I would encourage parents to remember is that this is not a parental works program. So there, our kids' salvation, first of all, we have the church to support us, and I don't want, even as I emphasize the parents, that God has given us the resources of the church. And God's grace, this is not a direct correlation. That if I put in a lot of work, my kids are going to turn out great. There are plenty of kids who've had good parents, who've walked away, and the flip of that. I know one of the most spiritual teenagers I know, and her family really is kind of a mess. And it's God's grace. And so we look and we see that in Scripture. We see that Timothy, who was Paul's helper, he had a non-Christian father, but he had a faithful mother. And so God is faithful, and we trust him. We trust his work, not our own. And so it's never too late. It's never too late to start, but it's also, we want to cry out to God in prayer and trust that this is grace. Grace, our whole faith is based on grace, and that's the way God operates.
As your ministry, the Paulus Project, you're going out to different churches and you're working with different, doing seminars and conferences. If people were to come to one of your conferences, come to one of your seminars, what could they be preparing themselves to hear and to start working on as they're going to hear from you about being a disciple-making parent or leading worship in a home?
Well, I think you're asking what could they prepare, what would they hear? I think it really you would hear scriptural advice, scriptural teaching on being an intentional parent, and whether that's for the parenting with confidence when the younger kids are younger, or being a disciple-making parent. It just, when it comes to this aspect of our lives, sometimes it's haphazard, and we're getting it. Parents are getting advice from here and there, and they're Googling things, and we're not really getting intentional teaching about, whether parenting in the younger years or being a disciple-making parent. So to me, what you would be getting, or what you would be expecting to get, is this is scriptural teaching. Hopefully it's wise teaching, based on my kids now are 26 to 20, made all sorts of mistakes, but I've done a few things right. and so I've spent, 26 years thinking about how does the Bible apply to these specific principles.
This is a core gospel principle, and it starts in the home. And this is what we've been talking about and emphasizing, is the idea that what God has entrusted with us, we have been entrusted with the power of the Spirit and with the Word of God and the message of the gospel to point them to Jesus Christ. Where we fail, we can claim grace, but we can acknowledge that this is something that God has ultimately entrusted us with for the sake of the furtherance of His kingdom and His purposes in our lives, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's we see it in Psalm 127. We have this mystery: unless the Lord builds the house, the laborers labor in vain. Well, who's building the house? Well, it's both the Lord and us. And so God calls us to be responsible as much as we can, and yet ultimately He's the builder of the house. And so that His resting in what he's doing. Jesus said, I'll build my church. He's the one that's active. And so being able to rest in that. The Great Commission actually is sandwiched with two promises. All authority has been given to me, and I'll be with you to the end of the age. So, yeah, even as we're doing what he's called us to do, we're knowing that he's also at work.
We've been talking with Chap Bettis. He is the founder of the Apollos Project, a ministry that is based here in New England, working with families and teaching them how to live out the gospel within the nucleus of the family. He's also the author of The Disciple-Making Parent and with the author of Donut Date. So you can find out more information about all of those great resources when you give our office a call. It's 508-362-7070. Chap, thank you so much for being a part of the Many Voices for That One Message.
Well, Adam, I really appreciate your ministry, and thanks for having me on.
We hope you enjoyed this interview made possible by our ministry at Songtime Radio. You can find out more information about our ministry by visiting our website at songtime.com, where you can find this and other interviews on our podcast series, as well as our weekday broadcast, which includes teaching, interviews, and music. We also want to encourage you to sign up for our free monthly newsletter. It's got encouraging articles, and there is no obligation. To find out more information about our ministry, again, visit our website at songtime.com. This ministry is made possible by people just like yourself. We are 100% supported by our listeners. So if you have been blessed today, why not join with the many voices together for that one message, the gospel of Jesus Christ, with your donation to the Songtime ministry. To make a donation, you can do so online at our website at songtime.com, as well as by mail. Write to us at Songtime Radio, P.O. Box 100, Barnstable, Massachusetts, 02630, or give us a call. Make a donation over the phone. It's 508-362-7070. On behalf of our entire Songtime staff and our own Dr. John DeBrine, the founder here at Songtime, who encourages you to grow in grace and not groan in disgrace, from Cape Cod, I'm Adam Miller. God bless.